Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
Oh, so good.
Oh, it's so nice. I know you guys haven't felt this, but between Allie and I, the last few weeks, it feels like the first week that's normal back to recording, just with trips and sickness and everything going on. So it has been nice to just be back in the swing of it on a Tuesday night recording with you.
I know. We did our dinner. We had some very yummy salads from a local salad place, I guess.
Yeah.
So we stuffed our faces and we are so very ready to talk to you guys today.
And we have a lot to talk about.
We really do.
We do. But really quick, I have a little true crime news update.
Ooh.
And by news, I mean media. And by update, I mean I watched Under the Bridge.
Oh, you did?
Finally, yes, okay. On Hulu. So we covered the Rena Virk case a few episodes back.
Yeah, before that came out.
Right. So I hadn't seen any of it. And I was really not sure what I was walking into because my roommate was like, have you heard of this? And I was like, have I?
Let me tell you something.
And she put it out and she was like, it's like kind of weird because it kind of reminds me of like Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn. And I was like, ooh, I don't know how I feel about that. And then I watched it and it was so beautifully done.
Really?
It was so beautifully done. And I found out that Manjeet, Rena's dad, was actually involved in the creation of it, or at least a book that he wrote was. So he had like a strong influence on how they portrayed things.
Good.
And it just, it was so heartwarming to see it done well and done with justice, even though it was like a dramatized version of it, you know?
Well, yeah, on that big of a scale, too, and when you're putting it into, like, a movie or TV, like, long-form entertainment like that, right. Like, it's so valuable to have the real people's input.
Yes.
And that you're doing their story. You know, you're not doing their story a disservice, right? You're talking about their daughter and what happened, and you want to make sure that for this 8-part series or whatever it is that you're doing...
Oh, my God, it was.
That, was it really?
Yeah.
Hulu's pretty notorious for 8-parters, right?
Yes.
So I think that that's great.
Yeah.
It's on my list to watch.
I definitely recommend it. I cried at it. It was very sweet. I think they did a really phenomenal job of showing Rena as a person, separate from the actions that Rena took that sort of led up to everything. Never that she deserved it or anticipated it or should have, but just that whole drama that kind of got sucked in and around the murder of her.
And I think part of the reason I've not watched it yet is because I had a challenging time with Rena's case. I think any time, I mean, like, she was a child. She was a teenager, yes. But she was a child. And I have not fascination, I don't mean that, but, like, I tend to choose a lot of child cases. Like, next week, you will see that I will be talking about a child case. Mm. So it's not that, but, like, I think that they're so important to talk about because it's the most innocent victim that you can have.
Yeah.
And so that means that there's so many other players involved, so many other people hold authority over that individual. And I struggled with Rena's because she was a kid. And whether she made mistakes or didn't, I don't really give a shit.
She deserved it.
She was human.
Yeah.
So by definition, she made mistakes, which makes her more human to me.
Right.
And she didn't deserve that. And that a group of them could do that. It was heartbreaking in a way of like being a teenager sucks already.
Yes.
And oh, I was such an asshole as a teenager and people were such assholes to me. And I think that that's a rite of passage. You're an asshole and then people are assholes to you and you say, wow, I didn't like having assholery done to me. I don't think I should have assholery come out of me. Like, I think that we should not doing this.
I should work on that. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that that's part of growing up. And you should be proud to be a different person than you were when you were 16.
Oh, bless up. I am not
like
me.
Like, if you knew me then, you don't know me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so it's just, you're supposed to grow and change over time. And those kids should have had that opportunity too, but you made some permanent decisions and you took Rena's ability to do that away.
Yes.
So it's really challenging for me to like dive into something like that. Like when I watched the Gabriel Fernandez documentary, I forget if it was on Hulu, but I did watch, I think it was a 3-parter on it.
Right. Oh, that sounds Netflix.
Absolutely sobbed. Like my eyes were so swollen. My eyelids were swollen, like on the top, right. Like closing down. And it was just a heart-wrenching thing. And so I always struggle with the kids ones, but they're always so important to talk about. And Rena's still a kid. So the fact that that can be done well and highlight her as the person and that,
oh my gosh,
there are relatable things. Like, yeah, we were all teenagers.
Well, and the thing that I really liked about this series is that they did not give Kelly Ellard shit. At the end of that, when she dragged out the whole process, she made it what, like, half of our episode was just talking about her court process because she did so much to keep that going. They gave her nothing.
Good.
Which I was like, yes, thank you. A series that is just Rena. Yeah. Like, it is about her and her family.
Because it's not a documentary on the case and everything that happened. It was, yeah.
And, like, we, as people in criminal justice and, like, who like to inform people about the whole process, we're going to talk about it, of course. But it's so nice when it becomes, like, a TV show. It becomes something that's a little more mediaized and dramatized and all of that. That it does get to focus on what's important, and that is Rena and all of the shit that she went through and how we can somehow take all of that hurt and awful and learn something from it.
And have it reach people that otherwise probably might not have heard of it.
Right. So anyway, all of that to say, I just really liked it. And good. I think you guys should watch it if you're into it. But also, while we're sort of on this note, I'm just going to welcome you all. Hi.
Hi. Hello. There's so many new cool cats and kittens.
I know. Welcome to the ATFTC fam. You're listening to About Time for True Crime, which, not to brag, but I have heard on a few occasions that this might be your favorite true crime podcast. And oh my gosh, aw, you're making me blush.
You shouldn't have.
Seriously. But if you're new here, welcome. And hopefully that's a little foreshadowing for you. But, it, you know, find out for yourself. Stick around. We know the table has grown a lot in the last few months or so.
Oh, yeah.
And so we just wanted to do a little reintroduction if you're new here. For a little recap before today's episode, Allie and I wanted to tell you a little bit about us again before hopping into it. And also, just as like a little teaser, we did ask for what you guys wanted to hear more of on our Instagram page. And you did say that you wanted cases where the offender was exonerated. So today you're getting a little taste of that.
Thanks, Megan.
Mixed in with like a hefty dose of criminology sprinkled into it.
Yes.
So yeah, seriously, shout out to Megan for that request. I had so much fun making this.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the first time I got to use my criminology cap in a hot minute. Not heck just yeah. Like the criminal justice.
Oh, yeah.
So it was very fun. But first things first. A little about us. So Allie and I both have degrees in the field of criminal justice with a combined 10 years of education in the field. We have worked closely with professionals and individuals all over the system and its different facets. We do not represent our workplaces. Allie and I are actually besties that met knowing that we both worked in the field. And because of that, we like to make it very clear that this is an Allie and Abby thing. This is not wherever we work or what we do.
Yes, we don't speak for anybody else. This is our personal, this is what we choose to talk about and have fun doing in our free time. Yes, we're weird. We don't get enough of it in our normal lives.
Yeah, and I guess 40 hours a week isn't enough, huh? Aw, of you either. Cute. So we also like to give you well-researched cases, obviously. We're nerds about it. We're super into the whole thing, the cases, the system, the way it all works. But we do give you our sources for 100% of our episodes. You have them all.
Correct.
Also, we strongly believe that if you aren't laughing, you're crying. So we try to do a lot of both here. Of course, we never laugh at anyone in our cases, with the exception of the offenders. We do like to try to laugh at them when we can. But we also cry together too. We just think that laughter is a great medicine in this world when it feels a little too shitty to handle without it, you know?
Yeah, we definitely say that if you aren't laughing, you're crying. And if you don't have that kind of dark sense of humor to pull you out of it, it can and will be too much. And so pardon us. This is how we cope. And trust me, when we say that we feel every single one of these cases that we talk about, we dive into these for hours and nothing that we say is at a victim's expense.
Never. We so deeply respect all of the victims involved in a crime, whether that is a murder and we're talking about the victim that was murdered, but also the secondhand victims, the thirdhand victims, their family, their friends, the people that this touches everywhere. The only person we will laugh at is the offender. And I will make a dad joke at pretty much anything that's appropriate.
Oh, we roast the hell out of them.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty fun. But all of that to be said, it is done with respect and love for the people that deserve it in all of these stories. And again, Allie and I are besties. Like, we are just going to giggle sometimes. That is just part of us.
Hell yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I like it when I hear people being human and sharing something well-researched. So,
I mean, that's my opinion, but we tend to agree on a lot.
Yeah. But that was just my little welcome. So if you're new here, we are so glad that you're here in the ATFTC fam. Big smooches and little consensual nose boops for all of you.
Yeah, you and your pod pets.
Yeah. We also love pod pets. If you have a pet, please, oh my God, send it to our Instagram. It's linked below. But love that. So second, and per the usual, I am listing my sources and trigger warnings. So hey.
Hey.
For sources today, we have the LA Times, AP News, NBC, the Hawaii Innocence Project, Forbes, and more. Always listed below or in a Google Doc linked below. But for trigger warnings, I'm going to mention sexual assault, kidnapping, lies, discrimination, and more. But for once, I actually don't have murder as a trigger warning. So let's marinate in that for a second.
Wow.
I know. I think it's maybe the first. Oh, maybe the second one after Anita Woodridge.
True. Okay.
Oh, and Tracy Thurman. Oh my gosh. Third. Okay.
And Katarina Brunat.
Four. Okay.
All right. Anyway.
So out of 130 episodes, we've had four non-murders. Hooray.
Hells yeah.
Non-completed murders. So yay. But today I want to take you back. Whoa. So we're going to start now. So skippers, stop skipping.
Yoo-hoo.
Yoo-hoo. Pod's on. Today, I want you to think back to high school. I want you to like literally take a minute, close your eyes. I want you to remember your homeroom class. The wafting odor of BO and two strong perfumes and colognes trying very unsuccessfully to mask that smell. Mm-hmm. I want you to remember Tiffany, the teacher's pet who tried too hard and had a little bit of a lisp. And yes, it was me. I was Tiffany. I want you to remember the boy who was quiet and read under his desk or doodling. And like somehow he got in trouble for reading. You're like, come on, guy. It's not that hard. You like it already. Just look at the board. And how about that jock that was an idiot? Or did you, much like I, have a Ryan who was a jock but also so good at football but also so smart and so nice?
Ooh.
Did you have one of those? Just me? How about the teacher that was way too invested in student gossip?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let yourself go back to the squeak of the shoes on tile floors, fluorescent lights, and banging your head on the bus window waiting for those 4 years to fucking end. Homecoming, passing notes, coordinating cute parts of your outfits with your friends. Specifically the, well, I'll wear a dress if you wear a dress, days. The falling in love with a glance and the falling out of love just as fast. First kisses, first more than kisses, first heartbreaks and puppy love. High school.
Ugh, so many emotions.
Okay, well, if it raised your heart rate like it did mine, literally when I wrote this, my heart rate went from 70 to 90. We're back in reality. Welcome to the present. Everything is okay. You're so safe. It's all good. You're an adult. You don't have to eat that nasty ass hot lunch with milk at 10 a.m. Okay?
Thank you.
I know. We all need it. But that's the world we're entering today. And today I'm going to tell you this story a little backwards because we're going to start with the day it happened. But I'm going to do all of this telling you that this man is exonerated.
Okay.
He was completely acquitted of this crime after being convicted of it.
Okay, keep going.
And I want that known because many of you may know the name Brian Banks, who we'll be talking about today. If you are like me and you are under a rock and or don't like sports and or just simply don't have it in you to keep track of all of the names of all of the people that pass the ball around, Brian Banks is, or at least was, an NFL player. He, like, big name.
I just want them all to have fun.
Right? Just a good, clean game. He is an NFL player, a family man, religious, happy, wealthy, and adjusted. But let me tell you that this was not without trial or tribulation, and yes, pun intended.
Okay. Dad joke early?
What are we, joke
30
early.
Seconds into the case?
Okay. Yeah, probably.
All right.
So picture with me, if you will, Long Beach, California in 2002. What's that? You want some cultural icons to help place you on this wild-ass Jeremy Bear Me timeline? So funny you should ask. I was actually just about to tell you anyway.
Mind reader.
Kelly Clarkson had either just or was just about to win the very first ever season of American Idol.
Oh, Kelly.
Absolute pop icon Vanessa Carlton released 1,000 Miles that February. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Beyond that, happy Pride fam, Rosie O'Donnell came out that February. Woo!
Oh, God.
Low-rise jeans everywhere, except over your butt and your thong.
Yep.
Tobey Maguire, who? Oh, Spider-Man? Yeah, that also was everywhere. And pulling in last episode, Avril Lavigne had just released her first album.
Hell yeah.
Which did include Skater Boy. Culturally, the early aughts were like their own frontier of sorts, pushing boundaries, pushing new ideas, new culture, and turning more towards like aesthetic and attractiveness with each new technological invention. But life hadn't caught up to where it would be soon, so there was no iPhone or Instagram. Cell phones were still indestructible little bricks, and yes, I'm looking at you, Nokia 1260.
Throwing shade.
You could run those over with a car, and they wouldn't even crack. I look at my iPhone the wrong way, and it's like, oh, I'm so sorry, go fuck yourself.
Seriously.
Kids still had to play outside, and the world felt a little bit smaller, but after the fear of 9/11, which was still reeling Americans, it was a wild time. And so it's this weird time where people are feeling all of the things we're feeling. They're seeing all of this innovation. Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake just fucking broke up. You know what I mean?
Oh, heavens.
And yet there is still so much darkness that we don't even know how to address. It is such a weird mix of like a simpler time and so much less articulatable. Like... It's fascinating. And I'm grateful to live in a world where I can say, at least we have the vocabulary for these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that as progress, and I take any win as a win. So this is the world we're zooming into. When we zoom our little timeline into July of 2002 in Long Beach, California. Now, this is where I say it's a lot of criminal justice intermingled here, because for context for this case, I'm just going to be throwing a bunch of different stats at you that I think help sort of illuminate what we're talking about here. I'm going to use crime stats from 2003, which was the earliest I could find on Long Beach specifically. It was a year after our case, but it was only a year after our case.
Sure.
So crime stats, which I have linked below, of course, all of our resources. You have every document that I pull a number from today. So please, if you're curious, look at them. They're there for that. But in 2003, Long Beach had over 1.5 times the national crime rate, which is significantly higher than California as a whole. And California as a whole was still higher compared to the national crime rate.
Mm.
So think with me, Long Beach is like a little hotspot of crime within California, which is a hotspot of crime within the United States.
Gotcha. I'm with you.
Okay. And don't get me wrong. It's bad. It's a lot of crime, but it's no Compton, which still sits pretty consistently at 3 to 4 times the national average, which is a lot.
That's a lot.
All of that to say, Long Beach is like a smaller city with its own fair share of crime, even if it isn't quite the rate of what's happening at the heart of Compton. And this is a perfect example of the concentric zones model, which, if that sounds like gibberish to you. The concentric zones model is basically a theory of crime and why it happens. So it's not an explanation, it's not stats, but from what I've seen, and I grew up close to two large cities my whole life, it holds up pretty well.
Yeah, there's like 100,000 different theories on crime. Some apply more than others when you look at them.
Right.
And we're going to talk about this one.
Especially in different scenarios. So for concentric zones, which was the brainchild of Ernest Burgess, or Burgess, I honestly don't know. This is basically talking about where and what kind of crime takes place around a city.
Mm-hmm.
So the first zone would be the inner city. And then you kind of see these concentric circles echoing out, and those become the different zones. So
yeah, like they ripple out and they slowly get less and less and less.
Right. And then you look at the different kinds of crime, right? So initially, this was, I think, called the concentric zones theory of Chicago because it was used on Chicago first.
Ooh.
And it talks about how in the heart of the city, you see the most crime. And then, just like you said, as you go further out, it gets a little less intense. This Long Beach to Compton is that to a T. Mm-hmm. Compton has so much high prevalent rates of crime. It is perhaps one of the highest hotspots of crime in the country. It is insane. But you go 15 to 20 minutes out to Long Beach, and yeah, they're still 1.5 times the national average. But hey, that's less than half or half of 3 to 4 times the national average. So you're getting a little bit better, right?
Yeah, sure.
This is very similar to Chicago. So Chicago has a high crime rate. But specifically, Oak Park, which is a city about 15 to 20 minutes out of Chicago, also has about a third of the crime rate, just like Long Beach and Compton.
Okay.
Something that I think is very interesting here, actually, is as you get further out on the concentric models, Long Beach and Oak Park, so our two similar, smaller sized cities next to the big ones, have a third of the violent crime rate, but the same, if not slightly higher, property crime rates.
Interesting. Okay.
I just thought it was an interesting tidbit. I was like, huh. So it's the violent crime that gets less intense and not so much the property crime. Anyway.
People will be people wherever there are people.
Ain't that just the way? So I just think that it's very curious to think about as we're going through this. We're talking about Long Beach. We're not going to Compton. But that's right where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know. You can Uber there if you want.
Sure.
I don't know why you would, but you could.
You certainly could if you want to.
All of this to paint the picture that crime is happening and it's not nothing. It's not inner city level crime, but it's not the lower crime rates that you would see in a far less populated or spread out space. You know?
Okay.
But while life wasn't a war zone for many residents, I'm not going to pretend that there weren't parts that weren't wonderful. Another thing to mention about living in the Long Beach Compton area is, much like we who live in the Northeast are notorious for having a high cost of living,
mm-hmm.
like a stupid high cost of living.
Oh, yeah.
California's higher. So
it's absolutely ridiculous. It's terrible here. I cannot imagine it there.
It is terrifyingly impressive to have a higher cost of living than fucking Boston.
I know.
Anyway. It's in this world that Brian Banks, a 16-year-old, was in summer school at his high school, Long Beach Polytech High. He was making up some credits that he wasn't able to complete his junior year before his senior year of high school, but it was really important to him to get them done.
Okay, so it shows work ethic on his part that he's mm-hmm. putting in the work over the summer.
Right. Well, and the other thing, I don't believe he was trying to graduate early, but...
But at least on time.
Yes, Brian was trying to get his stuff together because he wanted to get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to end up stuck in Long Beach forever. I mean, if he was, he wanted it to be his choice. Sure. He didn't want it to be out of necessity.
Sure.
And it was this situation that we zoom into on July 8th of 2002. Brian was having a weird day. It was a weird day for him.
We're coming up on 22 years ago.
Yes, we are. See, Brian was making up credits because he really cared about his future. Yes, he wanted to be smart and have the knowledge he needed to go to college and get his education. But his sole passion, like his sole song, was football. And see, it's kind of weird because Brian is a 16-year-old looming at 6'3 and 200 pounds.
Damn.
He's a big boy. And because of his height, had done basketball like his entire life. Like middle school, early high school, they were like, you are so tall. You were doing the fucking basketball team, kid.
Was he getting in trouble in his youth?
No.
I think there's such a correlation between like sports and good community programs too. And like
yes.
low crime and youth. And I think in a high crime area, I mean, no matter where it is, I don't give a shit. When you have kids that are invested in their community that want more for themselves, that want to do well and get involved in like, hey, I need to do my homework because I'm not going to be able to play basketball if I don't.
Right. Well, so that's part of it.
And or I can't do drugs because the coach will bounce me. I can't.
Right. And I'm not missing playtime.
No.
So there's that.
Playtime. I love you.
I want to play with the ball.
No, give it.
My travel. But like, we also see in so many areas that supervision is so important for kids to stay out of crime. Like, you need adequate supervision, mm-hmm. whether that is from a parent or a family member or a neighbor or a babysitter or an after-school program. It is huge. It's so important. And so for him to have all of these clubs and activities and things that he was interested in, and to have motive to stay off drugs, to stay clean in his rap sheet and all of these things, not get in trouble at school, not get suspended.
Yeah, because he had his eyes on like his name and lights and he was right. going to get there.
And he was good, dude. Like I say, he didn't play football growing up. He played basketball. I think he said it was his sophomore year that someone was like, hey, you should try football. They saw him and they were like, that's a linebacker if I ever did see one.
Yep.
And so they threw him on the field. And by his junior year, he had colleges asking him to accept early admission.
Wow.
Like, he was good.
And like, they were like, you need to sign now.
Yes. It's a big deal when a junior gets early admission stuff for college sports anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Let alone one with, at that point, not even a full two fucking seasons under his belt.
There's kids that start training for that at like 8 years old.
Yep. And Brian knew football was what he was meant to do. So he had been working his ass off to be the best student so that he could get to the best college that would pay him to go there. And also the best athlete he could be so that he could do the thing that he wanted to do.
He wants that scholarship.
Yes. And he was going places. He wanted to become successful, help his family, and ultimately be able to do the thing that he loved for as long as he could. And I'd be remiss if I talked about a career in sports without talking about the time limit on it. There are so many different career paths, whether that is modeling or dancing or any athleticism,
pro sport, right.
That there is sort of a ticking clock on your ability to do that professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Your body will get older. Your body will break down. Somebody else will be younger and newer and faster. So you really soak it up for the moments that you have it.
Yeah, it's fleeting as soon as you get it.
Right. And I think that is sometimes part of the pride and the treasure of that as a career path of like, I was able to do this for a minute. How cool. Even if you're not going to be retiring from it at 80.
Right.
So all of that to say, Brian was fucking determined. He had drive. He had motive. He knew what he wanted. And he was going to summer school and he was going to suck it up to do it. But today was weird for a different reason. Because, yeah, he was going to summer school, but he was really excited. See, this guy, whose name, frankly, I don't even know, was trying to do a documentary on, like, I think it was high school football players or maybe pro sport-headed student athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to follow around Brian all day with, like, a camera and ask him questions and, like, do part of this documentary on him.
I wish somebody did that when you were in school, when you got your varsity letter in bowling.
Oh, I fucking wish they did not.
Your big-ass shoes.
My big-ass clown shoes and my big-ass bowling balls. And
sorry, anyway.
My dead eyes. I loved bowling. It was very fun. It's the only sport I know of that you can roll a ball with one hand and eat a mozzarella stick in the other, but that is also a very good description of what I did for 4 years. So all of that to be said, he had talked to this guy and he was like, awesome, I want to come around. I think it was right around this time, it might have been right before that, those junior year offers Brian was getting were coming in and he was trying to decide what to do. So the University of Southern California, or USC, was the first one to reach out, and Brian really liked them. And when this guy was like, all right, hey, I'll follow you around school, like, we'll do these questions, we'll talk about USC, we'll talk about all this stuff, Brian was so pumped. So he, you know, gets ready. He's probably feeling like a little extra suave for the day, like trying to look nice. He's going to be on camera. And he gets there and first period comes and first period goes and there's no guy.
Mm-hmm.
And second period comes and third period and fourth, and he's getting kind of annoyed. He's like, all right.
I put on my good cologne for this. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. And it smells the entire hallway because he's 16.
Like, oh, yeah. Because two spritz is not enough. It's like 10 or nothing, right?
Yes, it is all or nothing for the camera. Damn it.
Damn it.
And so he's like, all right, I got to call this guy. But it's 2002. Not everybody has cell phones. Very few people that are high school aged have cell phones.
Yeah, right.
So he knows, like, you know, the five kids he can count on one hand that have them, and he finds one and he's like, hey, can I please borrow your phone? I want to go make a phone call. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, absolutely. So she gives him her phone and he asks the teacher and he's like, hey, can I just step outside to take a phone call? I'll be right in. And she was like, yeah, no problem. But hey, while you're gone, can you take these papers to the office?
Okay.
And Brian's a good kid. He's respectful. And why the fuck wouldn't you? Like, your teacher's letting you go take a phone call. Sure. Yeah. I'll bring your papers to the office.
He's like, when I'm a big football player, like, don't worry, I got you.
Right.
Can I make this phone call, please?
So he happily skips down the hallway to, I don't know if he skipped, but he went down the hallway to the front office, gave them the papers. And it was there where he ran into this girl he'd known for a while. Her name is Juanetta Gibson. And so they had known each other since like middle school or so. It had been a while. And they start to talk. And by talk, I mean flirt. And
like leaning up against the lockers.
Yeah, like, hey, how you doing, boo? Like, cute.
Yeah.
And much like many relationships in high school, it was love at flirt sight.
Flirt sight.
Yeah. And by that, I mean they both were perhaps a little too excited and flirting.
Yes.
But after some talking, the two went to a frequented makeout spot on the school's campus. Ooh.
In high school, bad boy.
They made out for a bit before returning to class.
Okay, but did he drop the papers off at the office?
I am 99% sure yes.
Okay.
Because I feel like we would have heard about that if he didn't follow through.
I am hung up on that.
The amount
if you give me a task, I will do it.
Damn it. Get me the mail Dropbox now.
Now.
But I do believe that he had football practice that day. So after he went to class and finished the day, he went to practice. And someone had asked if he had gotten into any trouble that day, since they thought they heard a police officer asking for banks. And Brian was like, yeah, okay, not me. We're good, but I guess I'll check with my brother. And Brian went over to his brother, and his brother was like, yeah, no, we're good. And so he was like, no, we're good. And whoever it was who said it was like, oh, okay, I guess maybe I heard it wrong. Hmm. Like, not a big deal. And Brian ends up going home. He has a normal night. He eats dinner, although he never fucking hears from the camera guy again. Like, still to date. Never heard from him again.
Rude.
Wild. Wild and rude. And also, how very dare you? He put on his good cologne for this.
Seriously. That shit ain't cheap.
And so, the most confusing part of Brian's day happened after he went to bed.
Okay.
Because he went home. He probably did his summer school homework. He had dinner. He maybe played outside with his brother. And he passed the fuck out, as you would do after a full day. But it was when he was awoken to a few police officers standing around him in his room, flashing lights on him with their flashlights and with guns drawn, telling him that he was under arrest, that Brian was like, well, that wasn't what I expected today.
He's still 16
years old,
right?
He's 16. So I say that as sort of like a smart ass response, but like he's fucking terrified.
Oh, of course.
Because he went to school and went to bed, and now there's people with like multiple grown men facing guns at him, telling him he's under arrest.
He's and like, he you definitely have the wrong guy.
Yeah, he's like, okay, maybe wrong banks. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he does what he's supposed to. He's a good kid. He goes without fighting. He doesn't try to run. He doesn't say anything disrespectful. He just goes.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembers, he says his mom was crying while he's getting taken out. Like, people are watching in the neighborhood, and he's too scared to even ask what it's for. So it's not until they're like a bit into this car ride that he's like, what is happening? And one of the police officers who was in the passenger seat turned around to face him, and they said he was being accused of rape.
Oh, wow.
And Brian was confused and overwhelmed and likely exhausted, but optimistic because he didn't even have fucking sex. He was like, not me. Couldn't have been me today. Like,
and it's probably going through his mind, like, I don't know, his name's Brian Banks. Like, that to me is a very common name. Maybe it's the wrong name. Maybe the wrong house. Maybe whatever, you came in the night. Did you get it wrong? Like, I don't know. Like, if you're 100% positive you didn't do something, and that's something you'd remember doing.
Yep.
Then that's likely not, you're not concerned about, or you hopefully, you know, it. You're like, okay, how are they going to figure out that I didn't do this?
Right.
Not how am I going to prove I didn't do this?
Right. Because you're like, how can you prove that you didn't do something? There's no proof to say you didn't do it.
Right. Like,
because you didn't do it.
Who then? Because I went to school and I came home.
Right. And if it was me, I'm thinking, hey, I'm 6'3", I'm 200 pounds. Maybe they think I'm a full grown man. Like, if they're looking for a full grown man, that's not me. That's hopeful.
Right.
Like, all of these things that are scary, yes, uncertain, absolutely. But you're like, okay, it's time for the system to do its thing, to find the justice, mm-hmm. you know? But in his later interviews, Brian says he didn't even sleep that first night. They brought him to the holding cell and he stayed awake, just hoping.
How could you?
I don't know. I'd be so scared. B, it's not like it's comfy in Mm-mm. there. Like, you're not getting a padded bed and like a heated blanket to snug up with.
The lights are on.
Yep. And he's just hoping that at any minute someone's like, oh my God, so sorry for the mistake.
Wow.
Here you go, kid. Let's let you out of here. But he's also 16. So he's being held, I think, in a juvie holding cell. Like, I don't mm-hmm. think he's at like a state jail or anything like that where adults would go.
It is a very adult charge.
It is a very adult charge. And unfortunately, the next morning came and went and it didn't get sorted with someone coming in and saying, hey, guy, so sorry for the inconvenience. Here's some melatonin. Make up your sleep.
Mm, yeah.
Instead, he was greeted with nothing and more questions and confusion. And things just got worse for Brian over the next few days. See, what Brian thought was a bad nightmare turned into a hell of another year. It started with Brian being denied parole, having bail set unreasonably high. Like, I believe over $1 million high.
A million?
Yes.
Okay.
Like a stupid amount of money.
I mean, if this were, I mean, I know we started from the get with saying he's been exonerated.
Yes.
Assuming that he wasn't, assuming that he is guilty of this crime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to see they didn't just, you know, PR him and let him out.
Same, but also, I mean, if we look at a flight risk for a pre-trial bail holding or like releasing someone on PR, he had no money to go travel or flee with. He had no family in other states. He had no family in other countries. And also, he's fucking 16 trying to go to college for football. So he's not going to miss practice. And there's nothing, not one thing in his school record that would make you think, hey, this kid's got to stay because he's going to cause some shit if we let him back out.
Right.
So it's very confusing as to why this decision was made. I don't know. I can't tell you. But he obviously could not afford to pay over $1 million to get let out before a trial. So he had to wait there. And he was stuck in juvie until his trial. And yes, while it was a few short weeks later that Brian turned 17 there, which meant he was there for 3 or so weeks before his birthday. Mm. And then he had his birthday and then he had to wait longer for more things to happen, which just sucks. He sat and waited and waited and sat until January of 2003. So that's 6 months.
Damn.
That he's just sitting there, where he's charged with 2 counts of rape, 1 count of sodomy with a special circumstance of kidnapping.
Oh, shit.
Brian was 17, confused, alone, and so angry.
Of course.
Yeah, like, you know that one kid that's like, well, why are you punishing the whole class? Because that kid's an asshole. It's like the other way around. Like, mm-hmm. he's getting punished for doing nothing.
Ugh.
And so Brian's mom, a single mom who worked 2 jobs, who loved her kids and never stopped.
Okay, Reba.
She did have the heart of a fighter, though. But she put together every penny she had to get him the best defense attorney she could find.
Good.
And in all honesty, I did a lot to try to find the name of this attorney. Like maybe too much. I could not. And if you can, friggin' salute, bro.
And
if
send
I figure it out, yeah, I'll let you know. But as we talked about earlier, USC had reached out to Brian and was like, hey, we want you to play for us. So his mom did some researching, did some digging. She found a black attorney that she thought would be like very well versed in sort of how to navigate the system for Brian. But also she went to USC and his mom, it was like, ah, flashing, blinking lights. This is the sign. Like, this is the woman that will help your son.
Yeah.
So she ain't cheap. Brian's mom literally had to sell the house and her car to get him this attorney and to be able to pay for his legal fees, which are not ever cheap, ever, no matter where you go. Even if you get a defense attorney provided to you, you have to pay something.
And that's what you do for kids. And that just shows how much his mom believed in yeah. her son. You know what I mean?
Well, and I don't think he, I listened to a 3-hour long interview with him, which is where I get a lot of this information because I trust it coming from his mouth,
mm-hmm.
corroborated with everything. But coming from him, I'm like, okay, I know that you're the one telling me this.
Right.
But he said she got stern with him once and was like, did you do it or not? And he was like, no. But that was after like years. I think maybe after he was already incarcerated. So like she had no doubt in her mind that her son was getting a raw deal. And then finally, after so long of people being like, nope, he's guilty. Nope, he's guilty. Nope, he's guilty.
She asks him one
time.
She
cracks. He's like, no, what the fuck? And she's like, okay, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't blame her. I would do the same thing.
Not at all.
I would probably do it earlier, honestly. Like, I crack under pressure. I know that. So, but it was important to Brian and his family because they were Black that they wanted this attorney to sort of have some knowledge of what it's like to navigate the criminal justice system with a different colored skin than white, or what we as Americans consider white, which is always expanding and very interesting, actually.
And also in that area.
Yes.
In a high crime spot.
Well, as a white woman, I can only imagine the amount of hurdles that that simple demographic added to his life in any area, let alone this. So some quick nuance here worth noting. I am a white woman. I have a master's degree in criminal justice. I am not claiming to understand or know what this experience is in any way. But also, specifically, I use the word Black here to describe this family. And I say it for a few reasons. A, this isn't to be demoralizing or derogatory. In fact, it's the exact opposite. While I typically try to be a bit more ambiguous or vague when talking about the pigment of complexion, I know that statistically, people of color are incarcerated more frequently than white people. But specifically, Black men are incarcerated at higher rates than any other kind of person of color. And while I may be inclined to say African American, I don't know his family's lineage. And he was born here. So at what point does he just become a fucking American?
Right.
Like I don't know his history. Mm-hmm. I just know he's here. So I don't need to qualify his status here to describe his skin in the bias or lens that creates for his interactions. But I don't want to not mention this and have people think that that was
purposeful
meant in any negative way. I just think this is the most neutral way I can describe what's happening.
Yeah.
I try to hold myself accountable for all of this, but I like to get it out there because I think you guys deserve to know that we think about these kinds of things.
Right.
What I know of this trial is that it's an absolute clusterfuck, in my opinion. We know
professional opinion. Professional, personal,
emotional, spiritual, all of it opinion.
Financial.
Yes.
Correct.
Social, all of that.
All of it.
We do find out later that it was Juanetta that accused him of rape.
The one they had a little smooch?
Yeah, they had a little smooch. They fooled around a little and it went back to class.
At school?
Yeah. At school.
Okay. And not to say it can't happen, but okay.
Right. And Juanetta, according to the history that Juanetta went through, she had told her sister after school that she had been raped by Brian. And her sister was phenomenal. Chef's kiss, walked her right back to the school, said, let's talk to the guidance counselors. We're going to get you the help that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it ends up getting reported. And because of that, Brian ends up arrested and then suspended and taken out of school entirely.
And then the rest is history.
Then it takes us months and months to get to this trial with an attorney that is promised to be the attorney for him, mm-hmm. you know? And so Brian's family was freaking out leading up to and in preparation for the trial, as they fucking should. Like, I don't know anybody who wouldn't be.
Oh, of course.
Guilty or innocent or anywhere in between, you
right.
know?
But especially, this is an innocent man we're talking about.
An innocent teenager we're talking about. And they gathered reference letters, all of the early acceptance letters and accomplishments that Brian had completed, character references from old teachers and friends, beyond pulling school records to show that he didn't get into trouble and he made his own way. Further, the family had suspicion that the victim was lying, partially because A, Brian was there and knows that he did not rape Juanetta, but also because she herself had recanted the statement to one of their friends.
Oh?
Yeah, she was like, yeah, no, that's not true.
What?
Yeah. But since the victim had reported that Brian raped her at the school and gotten the proper responses, she had been taken to the hospital and had DNA testing done and was interviewed and so on. And also, fun fact, we love to see it. I know that nobody ever, and this is a funny little asterisk to put in here because she wasn't raped, but most people that are raped do not want to go to the hospital to get tested to have more people that they don't know and don't necessarily consent to touching them, touch them.
Right.
So the fact that people were on it and interested in getting this checked out, getting her safe, made sure that she got all the tests done, that she's not going to get some sort of disease from this beyond trauma. You know what I mean?
Well, like, right. Yeah. That the consequences that happened, of this could be as minimized as they possibly could.
That is a great response. That is phenomenal, especially for a young woman who is reporting this in a school. Like that, I think that's kind of a hard wraparound to find. So I will give credit there. But because she had this DNA testing done, wouldn't you be surprised to find out that there was zero DNA? Actually, not that. There was DNA, but there was zero DNA of Brian's.
Okay.
So he was excluded as a match from any of the DNA on her body.
That doesn't mean that it isn't possible she could have... I know in this situation we're saying...
Right.
She's recanted it. She's saying that. But it's not to say like, oh, it wasn't found, so there's no way this was an experience of hers. It could have been.
Right.
And I'm sure that that's what they argued in this case. Mm-hmm. But this rules him out. This is not your guy.
No.
Let him go play his fucking football.
Yes. He just wants to line that back. Okay? But after saying he forced her to make out before raping her and ejaculating into her, Juanetta having no DNA with such a quick response seems kind of like a slam dunk of a case for Brian.
Pun intended, because of the sports, or?
Well, no, but yes.
Basketball? No? Okay. That was really, that 3. Was an accident?
That was.
Sure.
But right. I didn't even have pun in here.
Okay, apple dabbles.
I usually do so that I remember to like nudge, nudge, wink, wink when I say you it, you know?
To tell yourself.
I do.
I love you.
But here's the issue. That does seem like a slam dunk of a case, pun intended this time.
Mm.
But Brian's attorney used none of that.
What?
In fact, she never pulled the letters that his family sent her. She didn't put any of his references into the case files or call back the football coaches who left her plenty of messages on messages to tell her that they want to help him.
Those are all character witnesses that could have been brought in on his behalf.
Yep. Instead, she offered him a series of pleas. She told Brian that she didn't think he'd get a fair trial because he was young and big and black. And so while initially he denied every plea bargain she brought, after the additional accounts of rape and then the added sodomy and kidnapping,
jeez,
she told Brian there was a deal he couldn't pass up, and he took it. And the deal offered meant that they would drop all of the other charges if he pled no contest to one count of rape. Since he was being charged with significantly more charges and ones that seemed to escalate
and in all severity, felonies,
he was looking at something like 41 years to life if he didn't take this and he went to trial. But
he's a kid.
He's a kid.
He'd get out at what, 60?
Yeah, pretty much.
Ugh.
At earliest, 41 to life.
And then you come out and it's a whole new world. What are you going to do?
I mean, can you imagine leaving the public in 2002 and coming back even today?
No.
I worked at a federal halfway house for a while. The amount of times people would come to their like first check-in and be like, oh my God, people had computers in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. And then I was like, oh, okay, so sorry. Never mind. I get it. But like, what yeah. the hell? So anyway,
he'd go away in 2002, be like, what do you mean in 2008 Britney shaved her head? What do you?
Yes. He was like, she was just breaking up with Justin Timberlake.
What do you mean?
So this deal basically meant that he would have a sentence of at max 6 years.
6 years too long for an innocent man.
True.
But a deal of a lifetime if he's guilty.
Truly. And his attorney was like, hey, listen, you're going to be out of there on parole so soon. And I so doubt that they're going to give you the full 6 years. Like, look at you. You're a great kid.
But that's not the point.
No.
But look at all this other evidence. Like, if you use that evidence, you have the case.
Yeah. But, you know,
slam dunk in the wise words of Abbott Appleson.
But Brian knew that his family didn't have a lot of money to keep paying for attorneys. They didn't have another house or another car to sell. He also knew that it probably would be directly against his favor to be a large young black man in a court system right outside of Compton. And hell, Kendrick Lamar was on the nose celebrating making it past 25. Like, I know that it's a saying that many black men don't make it past 25 without being killed or incarcerated, at least in this area. I couldn't find stats to specifically back it up, but either way, King Kunta is a fucking bop of a song, and I do recommend listening to it. Oh, and Googling all the references. It's very interesting. But all of that to say, Brian Banks, at the young age of 17, knew that he would be giving up college, a career in football, and even a high school fucking diploma, and that would still be better to face up to 6 years from that plea than he thought it would be to take the chance that he could get 41 to life if he went to this trial. So he pled no contest.
Come on.
And to those of you who don't know what that is, no contest is basically a plea that says, hey, I'm not guilty. I'm not saying that I did this, but I am saying that you have enough information or evidence to persuade a jury that I probably did.
Like, I believe you could win in court, even though I'm still saying I'm not guilty. I think you could prove I did.
Right.
Or convince other people I did. So I'm going to sit this one out.
And there are pros and cons to both. But one pro is that you don't formally admit your guilt. Brian Banks never admitted he did the crime, but he took a bum deal. And here's what gets me personally, a CJ girly myself, is the other part of this deal that I didn't mention was that he was pleading no contest to one count of rape instead of rape and sodomy and kidnapping and all of this. But he also would have to sign up for a sex offense registry for the rest of his life.
Oh, come on.
And so personally, a CJ girly myself, I think there's a lot to be talked about with plea bargains. And I'll keep it short because I could talk about it forever. But plea bargains are used in the vast majority, if not nearly all, criminal cases in the U.S. Our system depends on plea bargains, and genuinely, these are usually good. These are good for people, it's good for the system. However, there are plenty of people who are too afraid to go to the trial and trade the uncertainty of maybe getting life for a crime he didn't commit for 6 years. Because that seems a whole hell of a lot better than 41 at best.
Wow.
And so, in Brian's case, this plea of 6 years, and then I think it's 5 years of probation or whatever, and the sex offense registry, is not as good as it sounds. I know six sounds like a lot less than 41, but anytime there's a sex offender registry involved, that's life in a different way. Mm-hmm. That still strips you of freedom. That still means if you have kids, you can't go to their fucking school recital or a parent-teacher conference. You have to live so far away from the school. Good luck having your kid ever walk home on their own. It means you have to tell every neighborhood your worst crime. And for people that have committed sex offending acts, fucking good. But for a kid who didn't, a 16-year-old boy, I mean, what kind of life does that set him up for?
It keeps him right where he was trying to get out of.
Exactly. And according to the Public Policy Institute of California, 5% of their population is black, with a whopping 40% of Latinx individuals in the community. And yet, while, yes, Latinx individuals are still the most likely to be poor in that neighborhood, black individuals are the second most likely by, like, a hair, like maybe 3%. And if we look at the ratio of 40% of a population and 5% of a population to the two most likely to be impoverished, that is a wild statistic to look at.
That's staggering, yeah.
It's absolutely unproportionate. And if we didn't think that that was enough of a clue that Brian would have to work hard to have any sort of normal life after this outside of football anyway, let's add in the fact that he has to sign up for a fucking registry, huh? Let's incarcerate him. This good kid with college letters and character references, with awards and things that he's done, let's throw that away because that makes sense.
Hold on to that feeling for for next week's episode.
I know. And I, again.
But that's a different kind of life sentence, essentially.
It is.
And it does, if all of the pieces that he was putting together in his life to try to move forward as a 16-year-old kid, and the best way that you can as a 16 to say, okay, this is what I want in life. I didn't even know what I wanted for dinner that night. So
yep.
God bless him that he knew then what he wanted to do. That he was trying to say, hey, listen, I see what's around me and I know what could happen if I stay. But I also know that there's a lot of opportunity that is out there if I don't stay. And I really want to know what that's about.
Right.
So he started working on putting those pieces in place to get there, and then a false accusation can entirely ruin his life. And while he might do 6 years incarcerated, he's going to do the rest of his years on a list.
Yep.
A pretty damning list.
A list that stops you from doing a lot of things, from going a lot of places.
And let's be honest, probably not your football career either.
Yeah.
So.
No. Also, let's not forget that in any of this, he's giving that up. He's already been expelled from school. I mean, he doesn't have a high school diploma. How is he going to go to early acceptance somewhere? That's usually a pretty fucking everywhere prereq.
Yeah.
So all of this might sound good, but it really only perpetuates a cycle to be doing this to a kid who's not even fucking 18. He wasn't even 17 when the crime was committed, allegedly.
Right.
But Brian got sentenced. And he got sentenced to the maximum 6 years he could for rape that he pled no contest to. Which he was told was incredibly unlikely. And according to Brian, when he got back to juvie after being sentenced, his lawyer called and like did the, why, I never kind of thing.
Oh, come on. Like clutched her pearls about it.
Yes. And then she was like, okay, well, I can't represent you because you need an appellate attorney to go to the appeals court, but I'll set you up with someone in our office.
Okay.
And then he never heard from that other person or her ever again.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is just shitty in so many ways. So not only was his attorney gone, but so was his future and his mom's house and her car and pretty much any money that they had saved that they ended up using for legal fees. Mm. Per the 3-hour long interview I listened to with him, he talks about how challenging prison is. And yes, he was in juvie until he turned 18.
Yeah, but then he turned 18. He went to prison.
On his 18th birthday, one of the correctional officers gave him a Hostess cupcake, which I think was like a little taboo, but he was leaving that day. And Brian says he still remembers it to this day. It got him through the first like 2 years of prison, just knowing that there was someone working there who cared about him.
Like there was kindness shown to him?
Yeah. So he had this Hostess cupcake. He wakes up on the day of his 18th birthday and he's transferred to prison.
Wow. Happy birthday.
I know. And here's the thing. Prison is a cultural clusterfuck. It's a different culture in there than it is out here. You have to do different things to survive. People have a different moral code. It is kind of wild. Actually, more than kind of. It's absolutely fucking nuts.
But you know what they don't like? Child sex offenders.
That they don't. So Brian actually came up with this elaborate, like, story that he just lied to everybody about why he was in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the first place he went, he made a story. He stuck to it. He said he was in for like an armed robbery that he did with a friend, but he took the rap and he didn't rat. So that's why he's there.
Okay. Which, but inmates can find out why others are there.
So a little asterisk here. I don't know if he knew that that was a phenomenal story, but part of this culture is like, we don't rat. So
yeah.
That probably worked out in his favor.
Oh, he definitely knew that.
But also, you're right. Other inmates can see all of your things. It was a little easier for him because he was in juvie up until that point. So those records were sealed. So they didn't follow him there. But he gets booked. He gets settled in. And he's from Long Beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is a higher crime rate there. He said he knew like some tangential people there that he was able to be like, hey, I'm coming.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me out or whatever? Like, let me know what I need to know.
Yeah, some whatever. Of your friend's older brothers or like you might, your neighbor's dad might, you know, like there might be.
Your community might not be your best friends, but you know them and they're there.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were to go to your local, any one of us could go to our local jails right now and you probably know.
Someone.
One or two people.
or at least the name, you know?
Yeah. I mean, not like your best friend or something, but like it could be a face you recognize. And sometimes that's enough.
Yeah. And so according to Brian, like if you go into a prison, or at least the one that he was at, and you weren't in a gang, you don't get through prison with being connected to no one. You are not going to be a lone wolf there. You have to run with someone. Ugh. And so for him, he was like, I wasn't in a gang. I wasn't planning to join a gang. So they said for people that weren't, you ran with your neighborhood. So if there were people there from Long Beach, he was Long Beach's problem.
Gotcha.
So that's where he went. And it turns out that it was one of those like third party acquaintances that did the booking. And he was like, hey, man, I want to let you know I took care of that. No one else is going to see it. But you should know this could be a real fucking problem for you. Like, wow. You need to keep that under wraps.
So it was like a staff member there?
No. They let all of the inmates at that prison do the booking.
Okay.
Which is not something I've experienced, but very interesting.
But somebody maybe thought he was innocent or...
Right. Well, also, Brian talks about in this long... Oh my gosh, I linked it. It's the YouTube link. It is 3 hours of just straight interview with him. It is phenomenal to hear his story, just like his entire life story. But he talks about finding God in prison, and he's like, there are certain things that I'm telling you, like someone was looking out for me, and that was one of them. Because if you're 18 and you're in there for a child sex offense, I don't even want to imagine.
Yeah.
I do not even want to know. But that was part of it. And so during this time, Brian, of course, tried to appeal his sentence. He was like, there is no physical evidence. On what grounds would this be beyond a reasonable doubt?
Right.
I don't get it. But it was denied. He wasn't allowed to appeal.
What?
I also personally think that he should have used an incompetent attorney as a defense for his appeal. Not necessarily because she was incompetent, but because she neglected his case, in my opinion.
I mean, it's going to be so much more difficult to appeal when you accept a plea. Yes. Like that, it's stacked against you at this point.
Yep.
But arguing that like your options weren't presented or you were
improperly represented.
Yeah. Or just so severely discouraged from taking it to trial that you felt like you couldn't.
Yeah. Well, and when you're 16, I mean, even when you're a full grown adult, if you've never been in the system before, that's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about terrifying, life changing things.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a 16-year-old and you're getting that, what part of your non-developed frontal lobe is going to be like, hold up, maybe we should take a second?
Right.
So he tries, he gets denied. But during this time, fun fact, you remember Juanetta?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she sued the school and won $1.5 million in that lawsuit.
What? Okay.
All yeah. Right. While Brian was sitting behind bars for a crime he didn't commit.
$1.5 million.
$1.5 million.
From the school.
From the school system, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So Brian continued his sentence, and he ended up serving 5 years and 2 months of his 6 years before being released on good behavior a whole 10 months early.
Okay.
Cool. Then he had his parole, and he had his electronic monitoring on. He had to go sign up for the registry.
Oh.
And then he was out under close watch, but he was out. But then something wild happened. Because he got a Facebook friend request.
If it's Juanetta, I'm leaving.
It's Juanetta.
I'm leaving.
He gets this friend request and like his victim. She's like, hey, oh my God, friend.
Haven't seen you. Where have you been?
He obviously does not accept it. He actually, this is insane.
Brought it to his parole officer.
Brian says he froze and had no idea what to do, but instead he sent her a message and he was like, hey, why did you friend me?
Yep.
And she responded, but it wasn't even just like, hey man, I'm so happy you're out. It was literally like, what are you doing tonight? Like, do you want to hang out? Like, what's going on? And he was like, well,
do you want to meet at the mall? I have a hankering for another lawsuit.
Right? He was like, well, I don't know. I just got out of prison from the fucking thing you accused me of that I didn't do. I don't think he said that, but
he seems too nice for that, but we can say it.
Yes. It wasn't even like, hey, sorry for accusing you of the rape, sodomy, and kidnapping I know you didn't do. Like,
we were both there and we both know that didn't happen.
And frankly, not that I would think somebody who did have this relationship with an offender would do this, but it wasn't even like a holy shit, when did you get out?
Yeah.
Which I think would also be telling in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, none of that. It was like, she friend requested him, he didn't answer it, and then she fucking like you-upped him.
Oh, come on. Leave him alone.
So now, 2011, 9 years after his allegation, 5 years of served time, and almost completely through his parole, Brian contacted the California Innocence Project. The Innocence Project, according to their website, works to free the innocent, prevent wrongful convictions, and create fair, compassionate, and equitable systems of justice for everyone. Another little CJ moment here. Let's talk about exonerations.
Mm.
So, in the courts, if you're convicted of a crime, let's talk about your options. Yes, there are appeals, which we've already talked about. And these are the most common response to convictions. People appeal, basically saying that they've had a constitutional right violated.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be anything. This can be the right to face your accuser, a fair and speedy trial, a competent judge.
Yeah, any of your rights being infringed upon, you have the right to appeal.
But they do have to find that a constitutional right was violated for an appeal to go through. And I do believe you have a few options to appeal before you're totally cut off from that ability.
Right.
But as Brian's was already denied and he didn't have any new evidence, he didn't think an appeal was the right move. But also, there are exonerations. An exoneration is a little different because while there are oftentimes appeals that happen in a case that ends up exonerated, they're not the same. An exoneration is when you are officially found innocent after being convicted. So it gets wiped from your record. You don't have any of the sentencing. You don't have any of that following you unless people Google you, because that's the world we live in now.
Right.
But in terms of your record, it's expunged. It's gone. It never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is also not the same as being pardoned when someone takes you out of jail but doesn't remove it from your record.
Right.
So exonerated, you're completely innocent now. Everybody knows it. Including you, which you did the whole time, presumably.
Correct.
So at this time, because Brian had already put in an appeal that was denied, he reached out to the California Innocence Program and he was like, I really want to get exonerated. Like, help, help. And or maybe another appeal or both or something. He just needed help because he was like, this is not, I don't deserve this for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he didn't have enough evidence to actually prove his innocence. So they had to deny him. This could be from maybe where DNA was at the time, or maybe it just could be because all of the evidence that he provided his attorney that he didn't have other copies of never made it into the case file.
Yeah.
So he can't go dig in her files to bring them back. And he didn't have other copies. Oh my gosh. It broke my heart. He was talking on that interview about like all of his early acceptance letters, all of the early colleges that reached out for him to sign for football, all of them are gone. Because this happened right at that moment where he was getting all of these things and they gave them in hopes of this case and they never got used. They never got put in a file. They're just gone.
Just sucks.
It's just taken from him, you know? And now, of course, when it got denied, Brian, as you might imagine, after all of this, is a fucking fighter. So he was like, all right, how do I get the evidence to show that we have enough to move?
Yep.
So when Juanetta sent him that Facebook request and he sent the message, Brian says himself that he dropped to his knees and prayed to not mess up the shot that he had. Also, pun intended. He asked if Juanetta would meet up with him and she agreed. And Brian at their meeting had gone like all 007 and started secretly like recording their conversation.
Oh, he would be an idiot not to.
Yes. And he asked her what happened and why. And when Juanetta recanted her statement and was like, she said, you know, I know you didn't do it. He had never touched her. He never raped her. He never forced her to go anywhere. There was no sodomy.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. They literally made out for a little bit.
Right.
She also was like, I want to help you, but I don't want to have to pay back the $1.5 million that I won. Because that would take like a long time.
Are you serious? Those words, she said that out. She said those things
to the man that she put in prison and on a sex offender registry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She took 5 years from an innocent man's life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and scammed an underfunded school.
Yeah.
Over $1 million.
Uh-huh.
But she's worried about how that's going to impact her.
Uh-huh.
if this doesn't end in her prison sentence, I'm gonna be very upset. I'm gonna have a lot of things to say.
Okay.
I'm gonna have a lot of things to say, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
But here's the thing. Also, I should just remind you that it wasn't just 5 years, because this is 2011. This is 9 years now. We've been on parole this entire time. We've been on a sex offender registry for almost half of this time. But Brian now had a recording of his alleged victim and the only witness to his crime confessing it was a lie.
If that's not enough.
So something worth mentioning here is that this kind of evidence is not permissible in court. You can't secretly record someone and like show it to a judge and be like, ha, told you.
Depends if it's a one or two party state.
But what it did do was give Brian the evidence to bring back to the California Innocence Project.
Yes.
Who then said, okay, yeah, we got you. Don't even stress. And that is fucking phenomenal. So once Brian got involved with them, they were able to help Winnetta recant her accusation on tape, officially recorded in a way that is permissible as evidence, and they petitioned for habeas corpus. So since his initial conviction in 2002, 10 years, incarceration, electronic monitoring, giving up his high school degree, college, football, signing up for a sex offense registry, his mom's lost home, car, her child's future, and 5 to 6 years of some of the most formative years of her son's life. After all of that, on May 24th, 2012, Brian Banks was exonerated of his crime, and there was never any evidence because there was never even any fucking crime. Winnetta was never raped.
Wow.
And there's a few things I want to point out about everything that Brian went through and how he found the strength to get through all of this. Brian says that in prison, what clicked that got him through was not using his feelings to dig a deeper hole, but instead to use them essentially as passion to get out. A quote he said that I feel like is a perfect representation of that moment was him saying, "It's not about what you can't control, it's about what you can." And this is a direct quote. He says, "Let me start focusing on the things I can control. My emotions first and foremost. How I think about a situation, how I allow a situation to affect me, and what I choose to do as a response to a situation. All three of those things were always in my control." And now we had all of the information the courts did through this entire project. So I think it's time to tell you what Brian Banks has said the real story is.
Yes.
So I got this from that same interview when he was like, "Listen, I haven't said this before." I don't think it's a super new interview, but it's not in all of the things I read.
Mm-hmm.
But he says this is what happened. It does make me giggle a little, so I'm so sorry if I laugh at it. But Brian says that all those years ago in 2002 with his little hippity hop skip scop to the office to give the papers when he saw Winnetta like sitting there with the fluorescence like sparkling on her little eyeshadow, and they started flirting, that they had known each other from middle school and gone like way back, and they agreed to go to this makeout spot with like you know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, "Oh, you want to go to that stairwell?"
Mm.
Okay. And this makeout spot was like literally in the back of an off limits building to summer school students.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had some I think college like community classes or something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, you don't need the whole school campus for summer school.
Right. And so they have to like go up an elevator and then sneak through the hallway while these classes are going on. And then you go down this other stairway in the back of the mm-hmm. building. And that leads you to like this little, you know, the landing strip before the doors that are like the fire escape doors mm-hmm. in any public building.
Right.
And there's usually that little nook behind the stairs.
Mm.
Well, the door is locked from the outside. So the only way someone can come in and catch them is if they come down the stairs.
Which they would hear.
Right.
Okay.
So it's the perfect makeout spot.
Mm.
So they're going. They're getting busy. They're making out. They're like heavy petting. They're doing some touching.
Heavy petting.
And he was like, "Yeah, so we were about to go further. And like I started touching her down there and everything."
Oh, God.
And then he smells this horrible, awful smell and he can't do it anymore.
Stop it.
And he's like, I don't want to disrespect her. I'm not trying to make fun of her. Like, but this is just truly what happened. Like, I could not get into it.
Abby.
I was like, I got to get out of here.
Abby.
Yeah.
Are you saying?
Yes, I am saying.
It was Stanky Cooch.
Yep.
No.
Yes, Stanky Cooch. And honestly, he was like, I came up with like fucking whatever. He was like, oh, it's been a long time. We got to go back to like school or class or whatever. And she was pissed. Like, she got blue balled, which, I mean,
no.
Who wouldn't be, I guess. But
ma'am.
Like, she was so annoyed. And he was like, no. It's okay. Like, we'll get back to it later. I just want to get back to class. Like, not a big deal. He like tried to like play around a little. And he was like, yeah, she seemed annoyed. And she like kind of fake laughed at my joke. But I figured that was enough. Because, like, of course you're going to be annoyed. You're getting it on and then suddenly it's cut short. So he's like, I wasn't that worried about it. He lost 10 years of his life. A future, a college career, because he didn't want to hook up with Stanky Cooch.
That's a stanky stink wrinkle if I ever heard it.
That was rough, brother. Oh my God.
No.
And so he's like, I don't know. He has speculated as to why she might, but even he doesn't know why she lied to this day. He in one of the recordings that made me laugh, he was like, yeah, listen, her mom is fucking crazy. Like, I know her mom. So if nothing else, the idea that she might have been being sexually active at school would probably have been enough of a reason for her to like lie about it. But he was like, still not a good enough reason to take away my entire future, you know?
I
let your mama be mad at you. She should be.
I'm glad that he can kind of reflect on it. And I think because he's been so successful that it makes those harder times.
Right.
He might be able to look on that with more of a fondness than he might have if it really had defined him.
Yeah.
But we always say on this podcast that we always listen to the victims.
Every time.
We want to amplify their voices and we take what we can learn and do as much as we can from what happened because that's pretty much all that you can do.
Right.
But there is something like visceral in me when somebody lies about an experience, especially yep. one as traumatic as a sexual assault.
Yeah.
To claim to be a victim of that. You take a voice away from people who have gone through that. You become part of the reason why women or other victims aren't believed. It's because there's this assumption that you must be lying, and then you contribute to that, and you lie, and you create a victim in yes. and of itself.
Like,
what kind of system do we have where she can do that? Take 5, nearly 6 years away from his, let's call it 10, because really it was. Yeah,
truly, with parole.
Take 10 years of his life away from him, years he cannot get back, years nope. his family will not get back, thousands upon thousands of dollars his family will never see again.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets to just go, oops, sorry.
Whoopsies.
Why is she not in prison right now?
Oh, she
Why
should
is
be.
Not every cent donated back to his family? And to the Innocence Project.
Yep.
Why should she not pay restitution to him for the rest of her life?
Yeah.
There is
Come up with a total.
Like, if this doesn't make you angry, I want to know why. Because I could cry for him.
I heard about this. And when I finally heard like the full story from him, I was like, hysterically laughing, and not because it's funny, but I was like, what the fuck? Like, how do you, like, all of this
over because something she didn't, so juvenile.
Like, she didn't take a fucking shower that morning? Like, that's what ruined your life, was her hygiene habit?
Homegirl needed summer's eve.
Truly, it's pH balanced, I've heard.
From a friend.
From a very close friend. No, I'm kidding. Listen, you got to be careful with that shit, okay? Be good to your body. Google some shit before you start putting
things in. Juanetta should be doing shots, okay?
Juanetta should be doing shots, but the rest of you, Google, okay?
Like, damn. Take Not you, Juanetta. You do all yeah. of it, Juanetta.
But I was, like, losing it. Like, my brain was melting out of my body to be like, are you fucking kidding me? This took this man's 10 years?
And but you know what? Shame on his attorney too, because all of that.
I have a lot of feelings about her.
Because what was she doing with that time? Because you had a young man's life in your hands, and you had a slam dunk, pun intended, case handed to you with the DNA results
on a silver fucking platter.
And you had like 50 character witnesses.
Yep. You can have all of these people say, hey, he's a good guy. And then you know what? You don't believe him? Fine. Look at this evidence. He was not there.
And that doesn't mean that it's going to like prove it undoubtedly, but it will damn well get you close. It's not this unwinnable case like you told him it was.
And also, if she literally if she had friends that were like, yeah, she told me it was a lie, and you waited for trial, I guarantee you it would have been long enough that she would have already told one of those friends by the time it went.
Yeah.
So
but what is it though? So he had to give up 10 years of his life, and she gets an oops sorry? There's not even a slap on the wrist for her. I'm so angry.
I know.
Well, you don't get to do that.
Justified anger is righteousness. So I just...
You don't get to play God. You don't get to play with someone's life. And I'm looking him up. First of all, he's a very handsome man.
Oh, yeah. He's a handsome boy.
I'm very glad that he's successful and has found peace with all of that. And I'm sure that, like, in terms of the money and whatever it was that, like, for his family, that he can probably pay that back 10 times over, that his family's very well taken care of. And that makes my heart happy. But money is one thing, and money's great, right?
But it can't,
or evil.
It can't.
But it doesn't bring back time.
Give you that. Yeah, he... And, okay, before we're totally done, let me finish, because he has a very happy ending here that I want to make sure everybody knows.
I really need that right now.
And it's not over, because Brian did not give up on any of his fucking dreams. Yes, he didn't get to finish his high school degree in high school, so he probably has a GED, which... All the power to you if you get it. Honestly, I think it's harder than a high school diploma. But he also gave up college. He gave up football. He lost 10 years. And again, we talked about the time limit of an athlete. That's 10 years of a career he'll never get fucking back.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Yep.
But when he got out, one day he got a call from the head coach at USC. That school that asked him for early admission 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you want to try out?
Hell yeah.
It was the same coach. And he was like, you are such a good kid. We want to give you the shot. We don't know where you'll be. It's been 10 years since you touched the fucking grass, but you're here.
That's awesome.
And we want you.
Well, he made it, right? I mean, yeah, he made it.
No.
What?
Not the first time. Stop. He got up there and they were like, you can't make up 10 years in 2 weeks. He's playing with kids now that have been playing their whole life or who are in their 16-year-old linebacking prime coming right out of college. So he's tripping, falling, stumbling, ooh, clumsy in love.
Well, yeah. And if you hit the ground how many times, you're going to get up a little bit slower the older you get.
Right? But he didn't fucking stop. He went back and he went back and he practiced and he practiced and he practiced and he got... to the NFL. This man, with a 10-year gap in his football resume as a grown man, joined the NFL after being incarcerated and then exonerated for 10 years.
I could cry.
Amazing. Fucking amazing. He was on the Atlanta, what is it, the Falcons? The
Falcons.
And he was in at least the practice team for the Seahawks. So I don't know if he was like a starter or anything, but he was there too.
I don't know what that means. I don't know. I just want them all to have fun.
Brian.
But he did it. Holy shit.
He did. After losing what he thought was going to be his entire life and career and goal, he got out.
I just want to hug him. What an incredible story.
And after you, all Winnetta. Of that, he has helped direct and inspire movies. There's literally a movie about him, about the moment that he got through prison, like what got him to transform and move past that. He also has written a book. And he's an advocate for criminal justice reform. He inspires young kids to get on track and to know their rights as a human going through the criminal justice system. But also, he has been on so many different like podcasts, talk shows, interviews, where he talks about his experience and what he thinks went wrong with it and how people can look out for that and avoid it in the future. And I think that's phenomenal because, like we always say, what else is there to do?
Brian, you want to come on the pod?
I would love if Brian came on the pod. The other thing that's worth mentioning, it is not a drop in the bucket, so don't get your hopes up, but he did win $142,000 in restitution from California. So
big whoop. They paid her $1.5 million.
Yep.
I mean, they didn't, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, she got $1.5 million. And from the whoopsies.
The school just ate shit for a crime that didn't happen.
Yep. Yeah. For one of their likely best football players.
Like, how is that justice for her to just... Where's the deterrent in the future for another person to not...
Well, and that's the thing that frustrates me is, like, you, when you put in a police report, when you put in
like
any...
You're committing a crime by falsifying that.
Yeah. And that is punishable the same as perjury.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is...
You lied, bitch.
And then they proved it.
And if you admitted it, you dumb bitch.
In a court where they then exonerated him. So clearly the court system knows that that was a lie. And the lie detector test determined that that was a lie. And they did nothing, to my knowledge. Which, if they did something, I would fucking hope it was in all the articles that are linked. But I didn't see any.
You have to imagine that. I'm assuming she was also 16 years old.
Yeah. 16. Well, actually, it might have been 15. Because I think that might have been how he got the sex offense charge.
I mean, either way, she wasn't 20.
Right.
But even if she were... I gotta take a step back, take my little frustration cap off, and look at it as a child, too, who... It's not all that common that kids are making things up like that if that isn't happening in another realm. So if not him, maybe somebody else. But then that's when you look at the other adults in her life or something like that, because something else is going on there, whether it's just a mental health concern where she felt like she needed to do that for attention, like in what way her needs weren't being met in some other, like in some capacity. But he shouldn't have had to pay for that. And if somebody else was abusing that kid, then that person needs to be held responsible and that kid needs that help.
Right.
But don't blame an innocent person. And let them go down for it. And then you're like, yeah, sorry about that. But I was wondering if you wanted to get dinner, but it's actually on you. Because
Whoopsies.
I spent it.
Whoops.
You know what I mean? There's just... she could potentially be a victim here too. And somewhere along the lines, but she's not his victim.
Nope. And this was not his... This was not his burden to carry. And it has been his since it happened at 16. And so I will say I did, when I was looking it up, I was trying to look to see if there was anything like, did she have to pay the school back or whatever? And they did try. I haven't heard any results on that lawsuit, but
she'll pay $20 a month till she dies.
She's broke and nowhere to be found. So even if they found her, what?
Can't get blood from a stone.
Exactly. And okay, great. Here's 20 cents for the rest of my life. That's nothing. And that is genuinely all she would probably be required to do.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot to think about there. But if I can turn your attention to something a little brighter, or at least a little more interesting to me than one out of whatever, I used the National Registry of Exonerations for this case.
Ooh.
Which I don't know if you guys have heard of. I only know because I did a research project on it while I was working at my college. And I used it a lot, like more than I'd like to admit. I've spent hours on this registry, but you can go through, you can click on any individual who's been officially exonerated through the eyes of the court, and it will tell you what the crime was. It'll show you a photo, how old they were, all of the details, and they have it classified each case as to what got them falsely accused. And a lot of it is faulty DNA evidence, but of course this one is perjury or false confession.
Yeah.
So it is so fascinating and definitely worth a look. It's linked with everything else. If I can turn your attention to anything else that would be interesting, I would definitely say check out the Innocence Project. There's one for every state in the United States, but there's also just a blanket innocenceproject.org that you can go to. And then also Brian Banks has his own website that I believe you can donate to, but at least if you were interested in reading a book or hearing more from him personally, I know a lot of his interviews are on there, as are links to buy his book, see the movie, that kind of thing. So what a wild story.
Wow.
I'm
what
so
an incredible case.
Incredibly happy that we ended on a good note.
Yep.
and that there was justice for Brian, because I know there are plenty of people that there hasn't been justice for yet.
Absolutely.
And so hopefully the more we learn with every exoneration, with every case, is something we can take to further perpetuate justice for someone else.
Of course. And thank you guys on Instagram for recommending cases and topics to us. We like to listen to you guys. I mean, we're yes. having these conversations anyway, but the table just keeps getting bigger and there's room here for all of us. So we're just happy to have you here.
We're so glad.
And hear what you guys want to talk about with us. We want your feedback on this case like we do on every case. And if you liked what you heard and you want to keep listening to it, we definitely think you should follow the pod and rate us 5 stars. But I mean, we're biased, but still, you really should do that.
That'd be really cool.
You could check us out on our Instagram page and our email. Those are all linked below.
They are.
We asked you guys over on our Instagram page if you wanted us to do a Q&A, because we had like some questions, some here and there, like DMs and emails and stuff. And the overall answer was yes.
Yeah.
Very overwhelmingly, yes. So we asked you guys what some questions that you might want us to answer. And it's just fun and playful and just kind of a lighter way to end some kind of tougher topic. So I figure we'll pick a few and we'll answer a few now and later, and we'll kind of go. So if you want to hang out, great. If not, we'll see you next time.
We love you. See you soon. If you are leaving before we start this, though, just for the sake of giving you all of the same information as everyone else, I wanted to leave you with my favorite quote from Brian, which was, get hit and get the fuck up and keep on going.
I love that.
So if you're leaving, we'll see you next time. If not, we're going to keep on going per Brian. So, but we're going to do our fun little Q&A.
So the first question we have was asking what our favorite crime shows are.
Ooh. Oh, that's hard. Because are we talking true crime or fake crime?
I'm saying both. Hit me.
True crime is... God, honestly, all of them. I really like 48 Hours. I like 60 Minutes. Those are good ones for me. 2020
mm-hmm.
is good. I like Dateline, but I like Dateline the podcast, not Dateline the TV show.
Okay.
And if we're talking fiction crime, I love Gillian Flynn. Anything she does is like a chef's kiss. Sharp Objects lives rent free in my head at all times.
I think
times.
We've mentioned her in the last like 4 episodes.
I promise we're Gillian not like Flynn. Creepy obsessed. I just literally love everything you've ever done, period. In all terms of your books.
But and also not your books.
I don't know enough.
I'm kidding, but.
Oh, okay. But yes. So
I don't know anything about her, but I love what she writes.
She writes phenomenal crime.
Correct.
Also, I really like, we're talking fictional crime, Criminal Minds. Just
always. Ugh. You're a Matthew Gray Gubler kind of gal. I do. And a Shamar Moore.
Yeah.
And I'm more of a Hotch.
Which is so funny.
I know.
He's so Play-Doh.
He's so like stern, but he has a heart.
Yeah.
And I love that.
But I want to get called baby girl or have some like weird ass knowledge chucked at me in the middle of dinner.
Oh, I mean, I want all of it, please. I want to be on that plane, but
take off in 10. Wheels up in 10.
My crime shows, I would say I'll start with the fake ones first, I guess. I mean, SVU, I feel like I grew up on. I've not watched anything recent of it because I don't have cable. So
same.
That probably contributes to it. But I love the show The Rookie.
Okay.
I haven't really heard anybody talking about it, but I know that it's a very popular show and I really like it. It's like a cop show, I guess, but
yeah.
It follows police officers. I mean, obviously it's fake, but it follows police officers in LA who are rookies. And the main one that it focuses on is a guy named John who is like 40 when he starts. So he completely changes his like life around and chooses to go down a law enforcement path from a very different life that he was leading. So I think it's a really good show and not like none of the actors like are corny, which that always is a complete turn off to me. I can't get through it.
Oh,
obviously I love Criminal Minds. Obviously Mindhunters. Obviously those for also, real stuff.
Just a quick add in for the fake. because I know we've both watched it now. Fargo, 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 Fargo.
And yeah, I did watch the first season of Fargo. So yes.
Oh, I love Fargo. I love that every season is a different crime. And I love that it's still all in the same universe, which is fun. Also, True Detective, very similar kind of concept. Every season is like a different law enforcement agency and professionals with different crimes in the same world. And specifically the season with Matthew Gray Gubler. Nope. Specifically the season with Matthew McConaughey and also Woody Harrelson. Like billion chef's kisses. I just.
Ooh.
Ugh. So good. Anyway. Sorry. Yeah, on to like your true crime shows.
For true crime, I'm a sucker for Hulu. I think that their documentaries are great. So they're pretty so much good. Everything that they have. I think there's like a 10 episode season. Maybe there's even two seasons now. And I think it's called Killer Kids.
Okay.
And it's about children who were convicted of murder. And so they've killed somebody. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that the show kind of highlights the process of when the Supreme Court made it unconstitutional to Ooh. Sentence a child to life. So okay. It follows a lot of their resentencing hearings.
Okay.
But it goes into the cases and what happens, and you hear from them about what happened. And, you know, it's like 20 years ago or something like that. But it's also the families of the victims who have now had this reopened again.
Right.
So it's very...
Oh, that's fascinating.
It is, because I like that you can hear both sides. So I like more of like those documentary types, but I'll be honest, I like to listen to a lot of my true crime.
Yeah, same.
I am a pretty mobile person. I'm in the car, I'm cleaning them up, I'm doing stuff, I'm working, I'm doing whatever it is. So I usually have my headphones in. That's where you'll find me. Yeah. And I just like to be listening to things. So, but if I think of anything else, I'll let you guys know. But real quick, that's my update for now.
I love that. How fun.
Another question is, do either of us have any secret or hidden talents?
Well, normally I whip out the varsity in bowling for that, but I think you guys already know that.
I will start.
Yeah.
I have this entirely useless, I guess you could say talent, that if I see someone's face or hear someone's voice, I'll know exactly where it's from. So
that's wild.
Like if I'm watching TV and a commercial comes on or something and there's like an actor that's narrating it, like I can tell you within like 10 seconds who it is if I know them. I mean, obviously I'm not Wikipedia. I can't tell you who everyone is, but if I've heard them before, even like once, I can probably tell you who it is.
That's nuts.
And in movies, like I can watch movies from like the 70s, and if I've seen the actor now, like I can probably tell you it's You're them like, from like 50 years ago.
Yes, I love that.
Entirely useless, does absolutely nothing for me. And in real life, it doesn't translate as well, but I'm usually pretty good with faces and voices.
I like that. I don't know, I can play a bunch of instruments, maybe.
Does yes, that you count? Can. Yeah.
Okay, I can play at least like 5.
I know you play the piano, I know you play the guitar, and I play the cello. Flute?
French horn.
French, fuck.
And ukulele.
I love that.
Yeah.
Fun.
So, I mean, I don't know. My brother plays a shit ton more than I do. And so does, I think my dad does too. But they're at least both significantly better than me at the ones they do play. But it's fun. It's interesting. It's the same part of your brain that does language, which is why I think I've kept so much of the French and sign language. And I don't remember a lot of the Russian, but I do remember all of the alphabet. It is so beautiful in cursive.
Well, look at that. I couldn't tell you any of that.
All right. Well, in hopes of spreading these out and not keeping you guys here for like 2 hours today, we will let you go. So if you wanted to see Brian or any of the people and places and things that we talked about today or in any of our other cases, you could follow us on the Instagram, where you could also add more Q&As. Hey, we'll answer.
Oh, and we do. So.
And you would do that if you searched up About Time for True Crime Pod in the little search bubble. So that would be ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD, because podcast was too long. But if you, much like our name, wanted to do something too long, you could email us. Allie, where would they do that?
If you wanted to send us an email, you could do that to abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME numeric 4 TC@gmail.com.
And if I do take a look at my clock, that was
About Time for True Crime.
Bye.